When we're young, we have an amazing, positive outlook about how great life is going to be. But somewhere along the line, we forget to dream and end up settling. Join Up Dots features amazing people who refused to give up and chose to go after their dreams. This is your blueprint for greatness. So here's your host, live from the back of his garden in the UK, David Ralph.
Yes, hello there, hello everybody, hello New York, how are you over there? I seem to spend a lot of my time going over to New York. I used to live there for a while. Can't remember where it was, somewhere near the Letterman place over near Central Park, but it was a good place to go. So I might come back again because today's guest is in New York, and not only is she in New York, she grew up in New York, and she is one of those people that has got a talent which it's quite unusual. It's quite unusual, and it's a slight departure from what we've seen already on Join Up Dots. As I say, she grew up in New York State, and when she was young, she used to sing pop songs by Madonna around the house. Holiday! That's the only one I can do. And started writing her own pop songs at an early age. Don't laugh in the background, I can hear you. Then when she was 9 years old, her school music teacher told her she had the voice of an opera singer and took her to see her first opera. Now, her great-grandfather was a virtuoso musician who signed with Victor Records in the 1890s, but no one else in her family ever listened to classical music, which is a really interesting position to find yourself in. Most people will struggle with fighting their way to a new future, even if they're surrounded by people that have the same passion as them. But find yourself in a world where very few people understand what is going on inside you, and it comes down to a huge amount of hustle muscle and personal belief. And so she worked at her talent, found the right people to work with, and a few years later sang her first classical piece and has never looked back. But even more interesting is her refusal to do things any other way than her own, and is blending many different styles into her repertoire, even comedy, with an off-the-wall version of Hot Stuff by Donna Summer. And I watched that earlier. It's good. So we're going to link to that one. So with all the avenues in front of her to travel, how does she make the decisions that will be right for her own career and not dilute her natural born talent? And does she embrace the hustle that it takes to build a career, or would she just like to get up there and belt them out? Well, let's find out as we bring onto the show to start Joining Up Dots with the one and only Elizabeth Tryon. How are you?
David, it's so great to be here. Thank you for that amazing introduction. That was awesome.
It's lovely to have you on, even though I could hear you laughing at my Madonna impression, which isn't good. Kind of insulting the host. Insulting the host before we've even started.
I was laughing with you. I thought it was great.
So let's get straight into Madonna, right? Because she's obviously, she's been around for a long, long time.
Yeah.
And did you see her recently when she fell down the stairs at the Brits Award? Did you see that in America?
Yes, I saw that. I know. Thankfully, she was not hurt. But yes, I did see her Rebel Heart tour in New York, actually. So it was really nice to get to see her in person. And of course, I sang a bunch of the songs with her, but just under my breath.
No, you didn't. You belted them out like that, all of us.
Well, that's true.
I've seen her a few times in concert at Wembley Stadium many, many years ago. But talking about Madonna, as I say, when she did fall down those stairs, although it was kind of shocking and it was funny, did it impress you like it did me and probably the most of the United Kingdom how she was so professional? She got up where most of us would have been clutching our sides going, oh my God. You almost thought it was part of the routine. Did you see her in an even better light because of that?
That's right. Yeah, a lot of people thought it was absolutely part of the routine because she didn't miss a beat. And yes, I admire Madonna so incredibly much. And I think she just has this tunnel vision, and she won't be taken off of her goal. So I think once she gets the bit between her teeth, and that's it, she's gonna do it. And I so admire that. She just can't be distracted, no matter, even if she gets dragged down the stairs.
Yeah, but you seem a lot like her in a kind of nice way. Because I've been stalking you for a while, Elizabeth, looking around. And you do seem to have hustle muscle big time. You do seem to be getting out there. Because I think it must be nice to be at a point in a career where a lot of it's taken care of and you just get up there and you do the sort of singing. But obviously, you're getting up there all the time, but you're also getting down there all the time. You're having to get dirty to do the good stuff. Does it annoy you, that the hustle? Was it your natural talent to do that, or have you got to learn it?
That's actually a really good question. Nobody's really asked me that. I mean, in some ways it does annoy me for sure, because I where is that assistant? I'm still doing assistant, and someday someone will answer. And, but on the other hand, it is interesting, because when I'm sort of left to my own devices, which has really been the case for most of my life, it's interesting how things work themselves out, and how I kind of have learned, I don't always do this, but I've learned how to work, to not work so hard. Because I find, as I've been going along, that it's as I set a certain intention, and I say, I'm going to do this, that I don't have to know all the answers, and I won't know the answers. I'll only know, you know, the first little tiny piece, which is, okay, I want to do this. And maybe I only have one of the steps. Okay, well, you know, I could just do this simple thing. And there's a lot of trust. There's a lot of releasing that into the universe, or the ether, or the wider world, and just saying, okay, what will happen next? And then something always comes up. If I'm definitive enough, if I'm determined enough, if I have that Madonna, you know, vibe of, okay, just get up and keep going towards it. If I'm determined enough, I think that that's the biggest hurdle. And then as I like put down the stake, things sort of come to me, or people will tell me something, or I'll overhear something. And so it's sort of this magical way of feeling supported. And so I feel like I have assistance, you know, from the wider world, even though I don't currently have somebody that I could say, okay, look up all of this on the internet for me.
I think what you're saying there is, number one, you are playing to your super talent, as we say on the show, and you're finding the sweet spot that makes things become easy. And yeah. In business generally, we work really, really hard on the things that we don't like doing, and
it's
we
so true.
Find the stuff that is really easy actually brings about the biggest rewards. It's like this show, for example. Let's talk about myself for a moment. If
Love
you
it.
Are in podcasting world, a lot of people go, it's not important about how big your audience is. And they kind of justify that if I've got a tiny little audience, the show's going to be good. Now, I think that if you've got a huge audience, then a lot of the things are going to become easier for you. You're going to have, you know, high-class people like yourself coming to the show. You're going to get more opportunities. So for me, the sweet spot is getting the biggest audience as possible. Now, with yourself, is it about making your voice operate in a different way? Is that like a sweet spot? How do you differentiate yourself within that environment that you're in to find your own personal sweet spot?
Yeah, that's a really good question. That's a great question. And it varies, I think, from time to time, you know, depending on the situation. But yeah, absolutely, for sure. One of the biggest things for me was training my voice as well as I possibly could. And I think the personal sweet spot, a lot of it is just saying, I'm going to do this. And there's no doubt in my mind that I'm going to do it. Because when I was at conservatory, and I've actually never told anyone this story, which is kind of weird, but but you bring it out in me, David.
That's what it's all about here. We find the dirt.
You do. There you go. So I was at conservatory, that, you know, vocal conservatory, when I was 18, and I really had wanted to get in, and I got in, and I wasn't learning very much. It just wasn't the right environment for me. And I knew that I wasn't really learning to sing the way I needed to. And I wasn't going to get anywhere if I kept doing that. And I said to myself, what would I do if I could just do anything that I wanted, if I could just train in any way that I wanted, like what would be the best thing? And my intuition said, I would live in New York and I would study with teachers who were affiliated with the Metropolitan Opera. Mind you, I didn't know teachers that were affiliated with the Metropolitan Opera, but this just came into my mind. And I would take different music classes at different schools in New York, like whichever ones I thought were the most helpful. So I'd sort of design my own curriculum, and I'd get a college degree through all of this, even though technically I wasn't in college. So that was what came to my mind. And it just seemed kind of ridiculous because like nobody that I knew of had ever done this. I didn't know how to do it. And for some reason, I had this definite sense that I was going to do it. And I felt this almost this relief, like I'm taking charge of my own life instead of going with the flow of what I think I'm supposed to do. I'm actually stepping up and taking charge. And there was just such relief, I remember. And so I started saying this to people at the end of the semester, I'm going to leave and I'm going to go back to New York and I'm going to study there. And people just were saying, you're crazy. Like, have you gone completely insane? And a lot of people said this to me. And somehow I just was sure that I was so relieved that I was taking charge that, and I just somehow knew that it would work out. Because I just went with the feeling of relief of like, yes, that just feels right. I don't know anything about it, but it just feels right to me. And so I just stood there in people's offices while they kind of had convulsions and seizures and not really, but, you know, but they were just saying, well, what are you doing? And, you know, you're just destroying your life. And I said, I just feel such relief. I just know it's going to be fine. And sure enough, within like 2 weeks before I came back to New York, I had a teacher that was lined up, and within 3 weeks after I came to New York, everything fell into place, like every single thing. And I didn't really do much of anything. I mean, I called a few people, I talked to some people on the phone, but mostly it was leads were sort of given to me. People contacted me, or people, I mean, they did, I initiated the contact, but people would say, have you thought about this? Or have you looked at that? Or I would read something that suddenly I said, oh, I should look into that. And it wasn't much work. It actually unfolded. I think the main thing was this sense of trust in myself, this sense of relief that I had, this sense of, I know it's going to be okay. I know I'll find the way. So I think that's finding my sweet spot is whenever I do that, you know, whenever I kind of connect to my intuition and feel this sense of relief and feel like I'm present with myself and I'm not giving over control to something just because I think I should do it. I'm really listening to like what feels right for me. I think that's the sweet spot.
I think you're right because, I was watching your hot stuff video and I was thinking, this is a bit bizarre. It's a little bit bizarre, but I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it a lot because it blended something. And afterwards, I sat there thinking, what has this lady done here? And I thought to myself, I know what she's done. She's bridged that gap between me and her. There's a connection between us, which, to be honest, a lot of the opera singers, I'm not a great opera fan. You know, I could listen to Ness and Dorma when a football match is playing. But a lot of it is a bit kind of, a bit kind of full on for my liking. That has a kind of an identity that I looked at and I thought, yeah, she's onto something here. She's onto something. What you've done literally created opportunities in my mind. And if other people see it, it will create opportunities in their minds as well. Was that video that you did? And I am going to link to it because it is great and it's funny. And you are sort of very comedic in the way you're doing it. Did that open doors? Did people say to you once again, what are you doing? Are you going mad?
Yes, some people did. I think some people will always say that because, you know, they love you and they want the, you know, they're just scared at whatever it is that you might be doing that might seem a little crazy. But it did. And I'm fortunate enough to have done a couple of classical music and comedy videos. And one of them that I did, I actually entered it into a competition, a PBS competition, and I wound up getting to the finals and getting to perform on PBS this classical music and comedy skit that I did. So, yeah, so that has wound up opening some really nice doors for me. And I also wound up just very randomly, I met a writer for the, I don't know if you... It's the Tonight Show here in New York.
Yeah, I was watching it last night,
funny enough. Yeah, yeah. And I met him very randomly. I met him at jury duty in New York City. Random is that, right? But I showed him my Hot Stuff video, and I showed him a couple of my other comedy and classical music videos, and he actually showed it to the producers of The Tonight Show, and he said, whenever we need somebody to come and sing opera and be funny, we'll call you. So how
will
amazing
that ever happen?
And random and extraordinary.
I can't imagine there's any meeting, Elizabeth, where they go, oh, I'll tell you what we need now. We need a funny opera singer.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyone got any ideas?
Exactly. I know. How unlikely is that, right?
But
and he was so nice too. And he said, I know opera is not a comedy, you know, I don't mean to say it's a comedy. And I said, no, that's okay.
But once again, the beautiful thing about all this that we're talking about is that you are taking control. You are being yourself. You're not trying to be the new so-and-so, you're being Elizabeth and you're doing things in your own way. And I'm a great believer that if you put enough of yourself into something, the people that love you really love you, and the people that can't stand you just disappear somehow, you know, and you find your tribe. And in your environment and in my environment, that's so important to find that tribe, because tribes start talking and word of mouth spreads. That's what you're doing.
And there's such a temptation, right? I think to sometimes be that established person and do exactly what they did, as if that's even possible to do exactly what they did, you know, because I find I started doing that. I started reading biographies of people that had done what I wanted to do. And I thought, well, how can I do exactly what they did? And then I discovered that there were so many random things. It's just like your show says, join up dots. There were so many random dots that were connected. And I realized I could never do exactly what this person did. It couldn't be, they couldn't even do it exactly the way they did it. And so it was like, it's not really possible to follow another person's path, even though it's tempting to think, oh, if I only did exactly what this person did. So yeah, and I'm sure that's true in the podcast. I love how you were telling your story too of this is what's true for you with how to host a podcast, and I just love that.
Yeah, I do think it's you know, I'm a bit of an idiot, to be honest, Elizabeth, and I embrace the fact, you know, I say things that after the event I listen back and I think, what the hell was I talking about? Sometimes it's genius, and sometimes I listen back and I think, oh, it's like the gods were channeling through me and I didn't know what I was saying. And other times I think, my God, that's going to be out there forever and a day and I can't escape it. But it's me. And the thing is, you can't replicate it. You can't replicate somebody's lunacy. As you know, they can't replicate your hot stuff video. It will be a mild, diluted version of what you're doing, which is what it's all about.
So true. Nobody can redo my hot stuff video, so I love it. Exactly. It's so true. It's so true.
Now, if we take you back in time, like we like to do on Join Up Dots, obviously, when you was a young girl and your music teacher said, I think you've got the voice of an opera singer, How did he spot that? Because my daughter walks around singing all the time, Meghan Trainor songs and stuff. I don't think she's ever come anywhere near a note that I would class would be operatic. What did he see in you?
Well, it was actually a woman, my teacher, and she was doing, not auditioning, but everybody was going to be in the choir, and she was seeing if you were a soprano or an alto, because even the boys were kind of altos because we were all pretty young. So so she had each of us come up and sing scales. And after I sang my scales, and I like to do, you know, really high, like shattered glass singing, which at home, which my grandmother was, you know, didn't really appreciate.
I've got to stop you there. Have you actually shattered glasses?
Oh, I'd love to shatter glass, but technically opera singers can't shatter glass. So I did do it in one video, but it was fake.
Oh, so that's fake. A myth. That's a myth. You can't go, whoa, and shatter.
The most we can do is make the window panes rattle, which we can do, but we can't shatter glass, because in order to do that, you would need an amount of sound that no human could generate. But it's a great myth. I love it.
I feel cheated. I thought that was always the case.
No, it's always sugar glass. It's always fake. Yeah, it's so sad. Yeah,
you're ruining lives here, Elizabeth. There's all these people out there that were building careers, breaking glasses, saying to their mums, this is going to be viral, and now you've ruined it.
I know. I thought it was true, and I said, "Oh, can I do that?" And people said, "No."
Well, you get back onto the story now. I'm just going to sit here in despair.
Sorry to, yes, burst the bubble, but yes. So I sang my scales, and she said, "Elizabeth, you're an opera singer." And I thought, what? And the only way I knew about opera was from watching Sesame Street, you know, when I was younger, because they would, they told us what opera was. You know, they had a couple little episodes about it, brief little episodes. And then, you know, from channel surfing on TV, sometimes you'd come across somebody singing opera and think that's weird. And at least I would, and kind of change the channel. So, So I said, I don't think I am. And she wound up, she kept saying this. She's like, "No, you're an opera singer." And it kind of was like, you know, in the Harry Potter, when Hagrid says you're a wizard, and he's just like, what? I think you've got the wrong birth. And then he takes him to Diagon Alley, kind of, and, you know, and says, "No, there's this whole tribe of people that are doing this." And Harry's completely shocked. So it was kind of like that, because there's this whole group of people, especially in New York City, who are doing this, but you have to know the right brick to tap on, you know, to get to the alley. So if you know one person, they can introduce you. So she took me to, she took the whole class to see, to an opera, to matinee performance. And I didn't like it. And I just, cause it was long, and it was loud, and it was kind of almost, to me, it seemed almost sort of violent, like the way they sang so loud. And I, which unfortunately still can't shatter glass, which is too bad, but I just didn't really get it. And I said to her, I don't think I'm an opera singer, but she kept in, you know, kind of following me around, telling me this. And so I started listening to more opera, and I went back to the opera, and I heard one opera where this wonderful singer, Natalie Dessay, who's such an amazing singer, was singing in my voice type. And I just suddenly, I said, I can do that. And I just suddenly remember feeling so excited, and just knowing that I could do it, and that I wanted to have a similar sound to what she did. Because it was such a beautiful, beautiful sound. It kind of sounded like a bell in the room. And I just never heard anything like it.
That is a beautiful moment, because that ties up with so many of our episodes. It ties up with my own personal story. You'll be surprised that I am the world's most famous English opera singer. No, I'm not actually. But one of the things that you tied into there was the fact that I say to everyone, if you get that feeling of, I think I could do that, then that is a great place to start. Yes, you need to work, you need to tune your skills, whatever. But my story, just sort of really summarizing it, I remember hearing a podcaster once and just having that same thought, I think I could do that. And as soon as I got that idea in my head, everything else kind of followed suit. It was like the dots lined up somehow. So that is a real great thing for the listeners out there to think about, isn't it? If I see somebody and they go, either that looks fun and I could do that, or I could do that, then start looking at it, because that's touching something in you, deep inside you, that is laying sort of latent, dormant, ready to go.
Yeah, it's so true. It's so true. And I think at that moment, it's a moment of decision. And I think probably in your case, I think in that moment when you say, I can do that, because I had a similar feeling when I saw comedy once in the park. I saw improv comedy, and I said, I can do that. I would love to do that. And I didn't know how. And then shortly thereafter, an opportunity came. So I think when that happens, almost look out for the opportunity, because probably shortly thereafter, you will find some kind of opportunity will be brought to you. It just seems to be how it works. So even if you think, I could do that, but I have no idea how I would ever start, usually like an opportunity is coming your way at that moment, as strange as that is. I don't know if you experienced that, but that's what I've experienced.
Well, let's play some words now and then step into the second part of our conversation. I love playing these words. I'm going to keep on playing them. Here they come. Jim Carrey.
My father could have been a great comedian, but he didn't believe that that was possible for him. And so he made a conservative choice. Instead, he got a safe job as an accountant. And when I was 12 years old, he was let go from that safe job. And our family had to do whatever we could to survive. I learned many great lessons from my father, not the least of which was that you can fail at what you don't want. So you might as well take a chance on doing what you love.
Now, every time I play that, Elizabeth, I can almost hear my own voice saying it. I can hear your voice saying it, literally every single guest. Because there is that moment, as we were already touching on, that you think, look, I could do a crappy job in a bank. Well, I did for many, many years. That just was dismal and boring. Or I can go for something that is fun and inviting and it makes me come alive every day. I might fail at that, but at least it's going to be better to try to do something that has got a chance of success.
Oh, yeah. No, I so agree. That's such a powerful thing. And it's so true. I think we're all so afraid of failing. And I just love what he said, that you can fail at something you don't like. So, hey, might as well fail at something you like and keep on going with it until it's you're successful at something you like.
Now, obviously, with yourself, there's going to be times when you're standing up on stage and you are belting out the song, and in sort of America's Got Talent or whatever, they press a big red button. Now, you must have had so many times when you've been doing your absolute best, but the person in front of you doesn't like you for some reason.
Yes.
How do you overcome that? How do you sort of go, yeah, okay, that's your point of view, but hey, you're not going to stop me. I'm going again.
It's so true, and that's so difficult, especially when, yeah, you're putting it all on the line of something you feel really passionate about. I remember vividly when you said that, being in a record company office, and the guy sitting across from me, and he was talking about combining pop and classical music, which, of course, is my passion, and he said something about the difficulty of that, and I just practically lit up because I said, I'm so glad you brought that up because it's something I've thought a lot about and I can't wait to tell you my thoughts. And I start telling him like my great thoughts and he's not listening. He's staring kind of above at a spot above my head behind me. I see his eyes, they're glazed over and I'm thinking, oh my goodness, he's not hearing a word that I'm saying. And there was just nothing I could do. I was telling him my wonderful story, and it was just, I could have been talking to a wall. And then
you wasn't married to him by any chance, were you? Because that's what happens.
That's a typical experience, right? For when
you're... I experience that maybe 20 times a day.
I love that. Yeah, it felt like that. Exactly. And then he didn't sign me and it was so close, you know, to being signed and he didn't sign me. And I remember continuing to think if only I had somehow, I don't know, set off a bomb at that moment or something that would have had made him listen or something.
Slightly dramatic. That
yeah,
you were willing to go to terrorism to get a record contract.
I was willing to go there. I would have gotten very, I was thinking of signing the contract in blood. I was had, you know, these violent images were just coming. So that's how passionate, you know, I was feeling about it. Obviously.
Do you know, I loved it when Bin Laden won a Grammy. That was brilliant, wasn't it? That he went the same route.
And wound up winning. Oh, God. Oh, how awful, right? Wow. Yeah, well, there you have it. It's the violent need for the violent drive for success, right? the violent passions that well up. So that was, you know, I was just going crazy, and I remember thinking, I wish I had like set off a bomb or done something, pulled the fire alarm to make him listen to what I was saying, because if only he had heard me, you know, he would have given me the record deal. And it was one of, and he was saying, my giving you the record deal, you know, that's just the first step. It was like he was so close to giving me the deal. So your question was, yeah, like how to overcome that and say, you know, this just wasn't the right person. And I think it's that tremendous faith in the wider world and faith in yourself to say, I know I have something to offer. You know, that again, that comes to that sweet spot, I think, of that moment of self-trust and saying, I know I have something to offer. And I know that the people who are going to hear what I'm saying are there. And this wasn't the person. And later I found out, which I couldn't have known at the time, I found out that, I mean, I still technically would have totally signed the deal in blood, but I found out that it probably wouldn't have been the best fit for me, just based on some other stuff that happened shortly after that. So there has to be that level of trust of saying, you know, if somebody's not listening or they're not open, then maybe it's just not the ideal situation. And maybe if you did get that situation, it wouldn't have ultimately served you. So somebody said, and I think it's really a good statement, that there is no rejection. There's only the wrong fit.
Yeah.
And it's hard to remember that. But when you really do remember it, it really is true. There's only the wrong fit. And it's just saying, we're not a good fit, but there's other people, you know, that's okay.
Well, you hear it through literally every single artist. They've all got ripped off. They all have dodgy managers. They all and you think to yourself, really, you know, you're such a legend in the music industry, and you can still get ripped off. But it's got to happen, hasn't it? With the amount of kind of shady characters in your environment, you know, you seem lovely, and I'm sure that you're going to go on to knock Josh Groban off the top if that's what you want to do. And but there's a lot of people out there that are quite happy to do it in sort of shady ways, and you're going to come in contact with them. And if it feels wrong, as my mum always says, it probably is.
Yeah, it's so true. Yeah, it's amazing, this level of trust in, yeah, like you say, your own feelings. That you need, you know, trust in your intuition, trust in your feelings. It's so true.
So what scares you then, Elizabeth, as you're sort of moving along? Because you are, once again, you're in one of these environments, literally every day you're out there and you're going for it. And as you are pushing that envelope, more often than not, as you go into bigger arenas and wherever you're going, it's scary time. It's scary time. Mm.
Oh, yeah. It's always scary.
You are always scared, then, are you, at the moment?
Yeah, I would say there's always a level of fear that's there. And I think one of the things that scares me most is having that sense of feeling in one sense relieved, like I am doing what I want to do. And in the other sense, scared because I don't have control over everything. And all I can control is my own little piece of it. So I can do my hot stuff video and then it's out in the world and I can't do more with it. So people can respond exactly the way that they want to, and they will. And that's wonderful, actually. I mean, it's a really good thing. And it's also a scary thing because, yeah. And even writing songs can be scary because I don't have control. I start with an intention to write a song and one little thing comes to me, and then I just do that thing, and then the next little thing comes, but I'm not the one driving it, really. I'm kind of in the driver's seat, but I'm not really driving. Something else is driving the car.
Paul McCartney always says that every song that he's ever written, he feels like he's, as he says, merely the vehicle. Somebody else is like giving it to him. Right. And as it's coming through him, he will sing things that he thinks, I've never thought about. I'll do tunes that he hadn't ever sort of dwelled on at all. And at the end of it, he's got this song. And he always says, the quicker it comes through him, the more he believes in something bigger.
Mm, yeah. Yeah, that's beautiful. Beautiful. And it's so, yeah, it just feels like I'm not really driving this. And it can be scary because you sort of surrender this control. And it's the same thing. I remember getting up to perform the one time so far that I got to sing at Lincoln Center. And I stood up and I remember thinking that I really was giving a message, that it wasn't really about me, that I felt like I was there to give a message to people rather than that it had much to do with me at all.
So, and what message? A message of it's possible or what?
Well, this particular song that I was singing, it was a song, of course, I didn't write because it was a classical song. But yeah, it was a song about, it was actually a song about praying. And so it was kind of a, it wasn't a religious song, really. It was more of a classical song. It was written by Byron Janis, who's a great classical pianist, who also is a composer. And it was sort of his personal story in some ways. And I remember just thinking, I feel like I'm here to give this message, and it's not anything that I would have written or said, or, but it's going to be important in some way. And so it's important that I say this, and who knows how people will receive it. You know, it's important that it just sort of comes through. So yeah. So it's that feeling of like, I'm not really that important. It's just the message that's sort of important. And I think maybe that's, you know, Paul McCartney writing the songs, of saying, you know, this message is way bigger than me just writing something.
And are you bilingual? Can you speak the languages? Because I had a gentleman on episode 296 called George Dyer, who's an American opera singer. And as I was talking to him, he was saying that he can't actually speak the language. And I actually thought that all opera was Italian. That's where I thought he was. But I think it was Spain as well as opera, was it? Or is that right?
Yeah, there's Italian opera, French opera, German opera, of course, Wagner and, you know, the horns, Russian opera, and some
Russian
English opera.
That's got to be awful, isn't it? Opera.
Yeah, yeah. I actually don't really have many parts for my particular voice in Russian opera, so I never had to study Russian. But it is helpful. I'm not bilingual, but it's helpful if you can study the language, because when you have to memorize it, it's really hard to memorize total gibberish. So if you are familiar with the words, because I can't really speak. I studied Italian, French, and German kind of almost at the same time, so I would confuse them. I know it's not English, basically.
But you know, you can speak English. I can speak English. How many times have you got up to do karaoke, and when the words are in front of you, you think, I've never sung these words before? This is totally different words.
Yes, I have experienced that, yes.
And that's our own language. So in sort of Russian or in Spanish or whatever, could you, if you went wrong, could you sort of make it up as you go along? Or is that not possible?
I have done that sometimes. I think probably every singer at some point has done that, whether they admit it or not. You're obviously not supposed to do that. But
and what do you do? Do you change the words, or do you change the lyrics? Do you end up singing an Italian recipes? How do you actually go about it?
It depends. It's sometimes you wind up, I mean, not that I've done this often, of course. Can't believe I'm revealing these things.
You're a professional. No one listens anyway, Elizabeth.
Okay, good. Thank God. Thank God nobody's listening to this. But sometimes I'll find myself singing something from a different part of the song. So I'll be actually singing the word, because it's kind of like doing an improv. You just have to sing what's coming into your mind, because you have no time. So so sometimes some other part of the song will come to me, so I'll be singing those words. Or sometimes I'll just sort of be singing, yeah, like some Italian words that I know that aren't necessarily the word. But of course I don't often do that. I mean, that's very rare.
Yeah, I believe you. I can't tell one word from another. You could sing anything to me. I'd buy into it. It's perfect all the way along. I think most people would as well.
Because that's a good thing about singing in a foreign language, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We've got no idea what you're singing about. You could be singing lasagna 400 times. That's all I would know. So where are you aiming for in your career? Because you are, as I say, right at the very beginning of the show, you are somebody who's getting out there and you're hustling, and you've got a lovely, engaging personality. So I can see it working in many different sort of areas. If I had to say, you've got to choose one. You've either got to choose the sort of pop singing, the opera singing, the hot stuff kind of stuff. What would you go with?
Well, thank you, David, so much. I would definitely go with being a pop classical crossover singer. So as you said, someone that is similar to Josh Groban, or in the UK, there's Catherine Jenkins. And I'm not exactly like either of those artists, but definitely a pop classical
artist. Dreadful. Catherine Jenkins is dreadful. isn't she? You got to admit, she kind of gives it too much, doesn't she? Just calm it down, Catherine. You don't have to go full pelt.
I do admire, though, that she does speak to a lot of UK people, which is great.
Is she dreadful, Elizabeth? In your sort of talented ear, do you listen to her and go, just go down a bit, just whisper one song? You could imagine her getting up in the morning and her husband saying, "Would you like a cup of tea?" And she's going, "Yes, I'd like a cup of tea."
Just that calm temptation it down. Is always there. You know, opera singers in the shower, it's a nightmare.
Do you sing in the shower? Do you sing in the shower?
Oh, yeah, we don't come out. Sometimes it's like the whole act one or something. And people are like, "Oh my God."
you look like a 90-year-old woman, how your skin's so wrinkled because you're in the shower for 20 hours a day.
Exactly, come out waterlogged. So there is that temptation, you know, that all opera singers have to just sort of, yeah, really go for it all the time. So I understand.
So is she dreadful? Is she dreadful, Elizabeth? I'm not letting you go.
I plead the fifth. I think, you know, any artist is wonderful, that's appealing to many people, so I have to go with she's awesome.
I'm waiting for the duet between the two of you. That's what I'm waiting for. That's going to be perfect.
That would be great. I mean, I'm definitely different, you know, we're definitely different, but so that's my real goal. So I'm coming out with an album in the next couple of months, and it's going to be on the Cobalt, it's going to be associated with the Cobalt record label, which is super exciting. So.
And what's it called? What's this album going to be called?
You know, it's interesting. I haven't decided on the title yet. So if anybody wants to weigh in, they can always email me.
A life full of dots. What about that? A life full of dots. Join up opera. There's another one.
I love it. And then you could have really cool dots on the, you know, like, you know, the dots in Baskin Robbins. I love those.
Well, when you're not being Elizabeth, this is an interesting question. I bet you've never been asked this. And you're just being, just ignore me, Elizabeth. Mm-hmm. Is that easy? As a performer, do you always feel the urge to perform, or do you quite like the time when you disappear?
No. I definitely don't feel the urge to perform all the time. That's for sure. And I remember somebody said something like, you could sing opera. We were in a museum, and he said, you could just come right out with opera singing right now. And I thought, wow, that's the last thing I want to do. So yes. So sometimes if I'm in the shower, I'm really going for it. And other times I just thought, wow, I wouldn't do that. I'm really happy to just sit here.
And what do your neighbors think when they're laying in bed and you're belting out Ness and Dorma for the 50th time?
That's a good question. Yeah, I know all my neighbors. I always have known all my neighbors wherever I am, even in hotels. You really get to know people. And I try not to sing when it's late at night or early in the morning. Of course, sometimes if you have an early gig and you have to warm up, there's no way around it. So I thankfully have only had one person complain. It's the only time that someone's complained. And everybody else is usually really supportive. So there was that one time. So it can always happen. I heard that Placido Domingo, I think it was singing in an office building in New York, and somebody came out and absolutely complained. They just said, "Oh, I can't believe this man is doing this. It's so rude." And
because I used to walk around my office singing all the time, not sort of the little voice singing, you know, the sort of under your breath kind of singing. And when I'm walking around my house, I'm always belting out the songs. I write songs, and normally they've got a lot to do with my kids being idiots and kind of creating lyrics based around their idiosyncrasies to sort of wind them up somehow. But I can't stop singing. I love it. I love belting out a song or two. A bit of Rick Astley always goes down well.
I love it. Well, see, that's the thing, is that I think it's wonderful when people sing and yeah, they're just enjoying life. People sing in the elevator and stuff. I think that's awesome.
No, that's a bit weird, isn't it? If you're in an elevator, well, and you start bursting into song.
If you're in the elevator, but sometimes, you know, you'll hear somebody singing and then the elevator gets there and they stop singing when you get in. It would be weird if you were kind of standing there and they started doing that. Although I did sing on the school bus once. Going home, I was six, and I just started singing, and the whole bus was totally silent. People were just in shock, I think. I just couldn't hold back.
So this is you, isn't it? This is the story that links you to everything. You're age six, so this is a few years before your teacher was okay. saying, I think you should be an opera singer, because opera singers are kind of full on. And what he or she saw was not the singing, it was the passion. And that's what comes out of you, isn't it?
Oh, thank you. That's a lovely thing to say. Wow, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I've always loved singing and sang everywhere. And I remember also my friend, I was visiting my friend and her father was driving me home from her house, and I was probably five, and I said to him, I'm going to sing. And I said it really firmly because I didn't want him to say no. So he said, okay, if that's how you feel. And then I sang, probably, you know, loudly, a song from musical theater, and he said, oh, thank you. But it was, I just demanded it.
Were you doing jazz hands at the same time?
I probably was. And I just, but it was that, you know, I'm going to sing. And he said, okay, go ahead.
You see, he knew he couldn't stop it. It was a fire that was burning and burning. Yeah.